At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the Friday edition of The Yard, it's been a very busy day, been a busy couple days. That's what happens when you're gone for a while, you know, that's what happens. Stuff piles up, you gotta address it. And that's part of the deal, it is. But 707 camp today at Mississippi State. We'll talk a little bit about that today. Also going to dip into a very dicey topic when it comes to music on our top 10 list today. A lot of people have requested something similar to the list we're going to do today. So I'm going to settle the controversy about that particular thing. And I want to thank you guys so much for all of your support for the Dude. We'll talk about that for a few minutes and we'll move on. The limited editions of the Dude are completely sold out. We launched a website, dutynoblebook.com, and you can pre-order now. The books won't be available till late August, early September. But nevertheless, the limited editions that we did, we opened up the website yesterday, and thousands of you flocked to the website and crashed the website. They had to work through that. We were only going to do 200 limited editions, but I appealed to the publisher and I said, look, we had a lot of people that had trouble with the website. Can we free up some more? They agreed to do 100 more. There will be no more. And so we put 100 more on sale today, and in about 3.5 hours, they were all gone. So 300 copies and a bunch of the standard editions also been ordered. And so if you want a copy of The Dude, and I know that you do, go to dutynoblebook.com and you can order them. All copies purchased through the website will be signed. It's true. Every one of them will be signed. A lot of people think, well, I got to come to a book signing, and Steve, I live out of state. We're going to make it easy for you to get signed copies of The Dude. This I'm not going to be humble about this. This is the definitive history of the Duty Noble era at Mississippi State. I've unearthed a lot of good stories, some things that I didn't know prior to this research project, and I'm ready to be finished. I'm a little sad about it too, you know, because I've learned so much, but we're at the point now, we're at the business of book making, right? Pre-orders are out there, so we got to work through these edits and rewrites and things like that. 25 chapters, it's going to be over 80,000 words. It's the longest book I've ever written. It's also the most detailed book I've ever written. I'd like to think that I'm still maturing as a writer. I know as a researcher I am. And when you write a book of this magnitude, you know, good enough's just not good enough. And sometimes I'll spend hours just trying to get one sentence right. But, you know, the bulk of the research is behind us. It's got a couple small things to write. And everything else is already in editing. I've already gotten many of those chapters back. But as I work, what I do is I rough everything out and then go back and do the edits, because I don't like doing the edits because my heart is in every word, right? But that's about making the book better. You go through the editing process and sometimes their phrasing works better than yours. Sometimes I just don't feel like arguing. And so we get it all done. It's been a great process. And just to kind of give you guys some background, and you'll read about this in the introduction. You know, what first started all this was Zach Arnett getting fired. You say, well, Steve, what's the connection? Well, I'll tell you. When Zach Arnett got fired, I said, you know, this is not the Mississippi State way. We rarely ever have a coach that's fired or doesn't finish the season. And so I did the research. When's the last time that we had a coach that didn't finish the season? Well, 1937. Yeah, 1937. Major Raff Sassy, and I pulled up a digital copy of The Revelry online. to get an image for my article. As I'm looking at that, lo and behold, I see a face that I recognize. It's the one of Duty Noble. I'm thinking, what's Duty Noble doing in the football staff picture? Well, he was a freshman football coach. I said, well, you know, how come nobody knows that? Did I know that? I don't think I did. He was the freshman football coach. So I go back and do some research and see that he coached the freshman team extensively throughout his time at Mississippi State. In 1937, Duty Noble's Bull Pups, as we called them back then, even though that we were still called the Maroons, they were the Bull Pups because Bulldogs was the unofficial nickname of Mississippi State College. And in that year, your Bull Pups went undefeated and unscored upon. Yeah, undefeated and unscored upon. That's pretty special. It's one thing to go undefeated, but to not give up a single point the entire year, that is remarkable. There aren't a lot of Division I teams that could say they did that, even the more dominant teams over the years. I mean, it's pretty crazy. That's a little interesting factoid there. And so I thought, why isn't this more well known? And if you go look at Duty Noble's Wikipedia page, there's not a lot out there about Duty Noble. Matter of fact, I've traded some messages with Scott Strickland here in the last couple weeks, former Mississippi State athletic director, now the current director of athletics at the University of Florida. I had the honor and privilege of sitting down with Bailey Howell here recently. Got a last-minute invite and to the Old Dogs Club and went over there and hung out with those guys for a while. And I just happened to be working on the Babe McCarthy chapter, and I said, this would be perfect to get a little comment and perhaps some color from Bailey Howell. Some controversial things happened in the early stages of the Babe McCarthy era. You guys are well aware of the game of change, but maybe you don't know the backstory that kind of led to some of that stuff. And so I tell that in great detail in that chapter. And so I reached out to Scott and said, hey, I just want you to know I had a chance to sit down with Mr. Bailey today. What an amazing man he is. You really married into a good family. And he agreed. He goes, hey, he's a better man than he was a basketball player, and he's a Hall of Fame basketball player. And it's true. But so as I'm working through all that, Scott says, hey, you know, I don't know a lot about Duty Noble. And the truth of the matter is most people don't. I have learned more about Duty Noble in the last 3 months than I've learned in my entire life. And so we're going to share that with you. And again, books will be out late August, early September, you know, barring something totally unforeseen. You know, we're in line, you know, they tell us to come about 6 weeks. So the book will push off the print in early July. We'll have it back in about, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, I guess. You know, that's how it works. But, this has been a worthwhile pursuit. And, you know, one of the things I did when I first began to consider doing this, I reached out to Sid Salter. I was like, Sid, do you think this is a worthwhile pursuit? And he's like, whoa. Steve, absolutely. Reached out to Rick Cleveland. I said, hey, Rick, what do you think? Rick's like, I wish I'd have thought of it. Reached out to Dave Murray, Mike Nemeth, the people that I trust and respect, people that know Mississippi State history. And I had somebody tell me this book should have been written 50 years ago. And I agree. But it's been my honor and privilege to write it. It is my gift to you. And I can tell you that Duty Noble's family, and there's not a lot of them, have been incredible to me. Absolutely incredible to me. And a couple things that we've been able to find. One of the things that maybe you don't know is that Duty Noble, for a while, was one of the fastest sprinters in the country. Yeah, he and Don Scott went to the Panama Exposition. We didn't have the Olympics that year. They were scheduled to be in Berlin, Germany. And we had a little thing called World War I going on. So we didn't do the Olympics, but they went out to San Francisco. And the family believed that they had a letter that Duty had written to his dad, or had sent to his dad. Turns out it was a postcard, and it was signed by all the athletes. It's pretty cool to have that and hold that in your hands. But all that I understood, as they're searching for this letter, they find this box, and I've told some of this to you guys before. They found this box of Duty Noble's personal papers, things that he had kept. And I don't know that they really appreciated what all they had. I don't know if they even knew what all they had. You know, it was a box that Miss Elizabeth, Duty's wife, had kind of kept up with over the years, and you'll read about her devotion and dedication to Duty Noble. throughout the book. There's a whole chapter at the end that kind of talks about that. But all that I understood, in these items, as I've mentioned to you guys before, we had the handwritten letter of resignation from Alan McKean to Duty Noble. We have a letter, a handwritten message from Bear Bryant to Duty Noble, and several other letters typed, be easy for you to read, that we've scanned and turned into digital copies, and they're going to be published in the book. And it's going to be some SEC dignitaries, some names from days gone by, including a very heartfelt letter from Babe McCarthy. And so I share that with you because I wanted to be as comprehensive as we possibly could in this book. But you're going to have a chance to see documents that many people, number one, didn't know existed, and number two, have never been published for public consumption. And it's just a sign of good living, man. That's the way I look at it. You know, you work hard. I believe God blesses your labor. And so we've got those documents. And we're also planning an exhibition shortly after the book comes out. The Noble family is going to come to Starkville, and they're going to bring all of the memorabilia. You know, that football, that game football from 1937. The final win that year was a 20-0 win over Alabama. I've held that football in my hands. There's going to be a lot of things they're going to bring that you guys have never seen before. And this is a celebration. It's a celebration of Mississippi State. And so I share that with you because, number one, it matters to me. But, number two, you matter to me. And I want to write things and do things that you find value in. You know, and, yeah, it's book number 7. And if you had told me when we penned Flim Flam that, hey, you know, hey, Steve, you know, you're going to basically write a book a year here. I've taken 1 year off since we wrote Flim Flam. And it's a lot of fun writing books. It's a lot of fun planning books and doing interviews and learning things. It's not a lot of fun finishing books. And there's a lot of people out there that say, hey, I want to write a book. And let me encourage you, you probably don't. You think you do until you get in this process. And there's so many things you have to do. There's just, I mean, again, I think the more books about Mississippi State, the better, right? Because we have been very underrepresented in Mississippi's literary heritage. And so, and I think I have all the books that have been written about Mississippi State, and I've written about half of them. And so, in my time as your friend and host, I'm going to keep pumping out Mississippi State books of history and Mississippi State books of relevance, because I think we deserve that. And it's what I'm passionate about. It's what you're passionate about. And so, let me encourage you, go to dutynoblebook.com and go ahead and order yourself, you know, some copies. I think every Bulldog fan, anybody that loves Mississippi State, is going to need this book. You're going to want this book because it's going to detail a time that predates all of us in many respects that you don't know much about. And there's so many things you're going to learn too. We did a lot of things to get in our own way. It's true. We did. And there were some other things out there that kind of happened beyond our control that really kind of slowed our progress as an athletic department at Mississippi State. A lot of things that I didn't know. And I worked for Scott Kennedy years ago at Scout.com, and Scott told me, he said, you know, Steve, if there's something that's interesting to us as members of the sports media, and we've seen it all and done it all, then it'll be interesting to our readers. And there's not a lot, to be honest with you, that, you know, kind of piques my interest. And I began to think, you know, it's like, hey, there should be a book about Duty Noble. And it's all of a sudden, it was like this revelation. It's an epiphany of sorts. Well, why don't you write one? And when I began this whole process, I didn't know anybody in the family. I went and spoke at the Starkville Touchdown Club, talked about my new book coming out, When the Bottom Falls. You can get that while you're there at the Dude, at dutynoblebook.com. All my books are there, all my sports titles anyway, and When the Bottom Falls. But anyway, as I'm sharing that, I mean, it's just almost one of those fortuitous moments. And I almost felt like this was destiny in many respects. And I said, hey, I'm going to write a book about Duty Noble. I didn't know how I was going to go about it. I didn't know what kind of access I would have. I didn't know what I'd be able to unearth. I didn't know any of that stuff. All that I knew for sure is that I wanted to write it. And after I made that comment, I'm going to write this book. And if any of you guys know any of the family, I'd love to speak to them. And next thing I know, I've got Duty Noble's nieces sitting in front of me. And now I've got Duty Noble's personal papers. And again, that's not really per se the praise of me. It's really the praise of the process and the fact that so many people have been such willing participants in this project. And now everybody's like, well, Steve, what are you going to write next? Well, can I take a break? You know, can I take a bit of a breath here? You know, I wrote When the Bottom Falls in 27 Days. That didn't require any fact-checking or researching. When you're writing about your own life, there's nobody to really interview, you know. This is a much different deal. I interviewed people on backgrounders. Not many people quoted from modern times in this book. It's mainly quotes that were relevant at the time. And, of course, I cite all of them with the publications that that published them. But it's going to take you back a time. And I'll tell you what's interesting, too. You know, as I write about these people, they're alive to me. I mean, they truly are. They're alive to me as I'm writing about, you know, Boots Johnson or Blondie Black. They're alive to me. And, of course, those greats have kind of passed on. And there's no kind of to it. They have. And then when you get to the end of this and you realize, you know, hey, I'd love to be able to share this with Blondie Black. And then you're like, oh, I forgot. Blondie's gone. I'd love to be able to share this with Harper Davis. You know, Harper, I quoted you again. And Harper's gone. And it saddens me to think there's so much Mississippi State history that's dead and buried. And so I really approach this project with a lot of vigor. And I think in many respects, to be honest with you, I think it's my signature book. I truly do. I think it's the best thing I've ever written. And I say that not just based on my own research and my own opinions, but you know, speaking with editors and you know, with my agent. You know, it's like, hey, this... I think they were a little bit hesitant in the beginning. They wondered, hey, is this kind of a niche book? You know, how will it do? You know, and your response has been overwhelming. And I want to thank you for that from the bottom of my heart. All right, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. I'm thinking about Bulldog Burger Company for supper. That's what I'm thinking about. I don't know what you're thinking about, but I've got a hankering for some Bulldog Burger Company. That's what I'm thinking about. I think I'm going to cap the show, and then I'm going to run and get some Bulldog Burger Company, and we'll come back. We'll do a Dude Effect show tonight. And we'll just kind of enjoy our day and our evening. And that's the thing about Bulldog Burger Company. They always have something to kind of satisfy your craving. You know, we have to eat. You know, that's part of sustaining life. You know, but I don't think you got to, you know, cut corners here. I think you might as well enjoy it. I enjoy eating. I don't know about you. You know, I'm not as heavy as I once was, but I still enjoy a nice meal. I can always get a nice meal at Bulldog Burger Company. It doesn't matter which one of the locations I go to. There's a consistency in the service, consistency in the quality of food at Bulldog Burger Company. Again, three great locations to serve you. University Drive here in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Pretty amazing stuff, man. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. It'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Have a great restaurant quality hamburger. If you're a newbie to Bulldog Burger Company, and chances are you're not, but if you are, start with the Bulldog, okay? That's just a good place to start. And then the next time, maybe get the Smokehouse, or the Bryant, the Lauren, the, you know, the Mission. I get the Pico de Gallo on the side, you know, my policy about uncooked onions. But there are so many things to choose from. The Freshman 15 was probably the second burger I had there, and sometimes I just feel like that's what I need to have. Some days, I'm not in the mood for a burger, but I still want to patronize Bulldog Burger Company. And so I get those Sloppy Joe sliders or Chicken Bacon Ranch or Sweet Heat or you know, the BLT salad. I prefer it grilled. You may like it fried. I don't know. It's up to you. But I always get the ranch dressing because I'm from South Mississippi. That's South Mississippi 316. Thou shalt have ranch dressing. And I'm not gonna tempt toward that, you know. So be sure and check them out. Great portions, great food, and the great service, man. You just can't beat it. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's talk football stuff here first. And some baseball portal stuff, too. We're already starting to see some, I don't know, some angst, I guess you'd say. Maybe. You're like, oh, Steve, why are we doing it? The portal's been hasn't even been up in a week. Goodness gracious. We'll get to that shortly. But Mississippi State this morning picks up a commitment from a 2026 prospect. As you guys know, State currently holds four commitments for 2025. Business is going to pick up. Heard Jeff Levy speak about that earlier this week. You know, it's like, hey, just kind of hang in there with us. It's not about how you start, it's how you finish. A lot of people are like, but Steve, there's, no, guys, come on. Come on. Come on. Just hang in there. And the good thing is there's some really good prospects in the state this year. But we picked up the commitment of one Kenny Darby. Really, 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 really good commitment here. I like him. He was one of the heroes of last week's camp. He was a guy, too, that anybody that Chad Bumpus wants, I want. That's my opinion. You may see it differently. Doesn't make any difference to me. But I think Bumpus has earned some credibility. Not to mention, you know, Chad's one of us, right? That do we not agree? Chad is one of ours. And Chad's a guy that knows what it takes to compete at Mississippi State. And so, of course, they offer Kenny Darby last week at the conclusion of camp. And, yeah, there was some discussion even then. He was, like, ready to go. But Mom is like, you know what? Hey, let's take a little time, be sure about this. Got a handful of offers already. And, again, to be honest with you, I think you hang on to him, provided LSU doesn't offer. But offers from Arkansas State, Louisiana Tech, Texas Southern, Tulsa, and USF. And people can be like, but Steve, why didn't he have 20 SEC offers? Well, number one, there's not 20 SEC schools. But also, too, he is a 2026 prospect. And so we found out last week that he was going to do it. That's one of the reasons we had our story ready to go. We had our graphic ready to go. And we want to be prepared to give these individuals, you know, a nice moment. You know what I'm saying? We just want to give them a nice moment. That's an important part of this. And I think, too, you know, when you commit to Mississippi State, it should be a big deal. Right? And that's how I see it. Maybe you see it differently. And I don't know how anybody else does their media stuff. You know, there's a lot of people out there that claim to be journalists until there's real journalism to be done. You know what I'm saying? There's a bunch of those people. And they love to run their mouth on Twitter. It's true. And some days, I want to go address it, but I don't. Just because I don't want my mentions to fill up with a bunch of idiots. And it's so funny, too, you know, to see all these people now, you know, aggregating our report. And so thank you for that. Really, really appreciate that. But yeah. I mean,
at Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Part of the deal, you know, that's just kind of part of how things work. Super, super, super excited for this guy. But I mean, you go back here and you look here, you know, Kenny Darby's number, he's a track guy, you know, so, you know, he's kind of fleet of foot, you know, and I think he's one of those guys too. When you begin to watch his film, I think you can see why Chad Bumpus was so excited to offer him. I think that was a huge, huge part of it. Number one, I think, you know, Chad Bumpus is a guy, too, that has the ability and has the know-how to kind of explain what it is to be a Mississippi State Bulldog and then to compete in this league. And so I think when he sits down with a wide receiver, it's not like, hey, big guy, we got a plan for you. Bump can say, hey, here's what we're going to do. Here's what I did. You can turn on my tape and you can see me be the hero of the Egg Bowl, or you can see me do this, you know. There's just instant credibility with Chad. And I think, you know, the main reason you bring Chad home is not just the fact that, you know, Chad was a great route runner and Chad knows how to get open and Chad knows how to compete in this league, but Chad understands the challenges that face these young people. So there is a lot of relative things that Chad can share that maybe, you know, a coach just passing through can't. And that's not to be disrespectful to anybody else. But there's probably nobody coaching in the college profession right now that knows more about being a Mississippi State wide receiver than Chad Bumpus. People forget the very first pass of the Dan Mullen era was thrown by Chad Bumpus. It fell incomplete, but it marked a new day that we weren't just going to be running off tackle and running halfback dive and hoping for the best and running the Gulf Coast offense. You know, it was a different dynamic, right? So, excited about Kenny. He is the first commitment for the 2026 class from Mississippi State. 35 catches, 561 yards, 9 touchdowns, and he is a guy that runs away from people. One of the things that I have learned about watching tape all these many years is that if a guy gets run down from behind, he cannot play in this conference. If you get run down in high school, you cannot play in the Southeastern Conference. You might be able to play at Southern Miss. All due respect to the Golden Eagles. I think Will Hall is doing a great job down there. But you know what? We need guys that can win the foot race to the pylon. You have to have it. And especially in this offense, where we're going to dial it up and throw it down the field. We need guys that can be electric in the air. We need guys that can elevate, make a tough catch in traffic. It takes a very special young man to come play football at Mississippi State. You know, and Chad, of course, has seen the better version of Mississippi State. You know, Bumpus and Tyler Russell and Cam Lawrence and Fletcher Cox and Josh Boyd, those guys didn't see a lot of struggles. You had some years we had some guys kind of beaten up. But the reality of it is they were here, you know, really, in many respects, out since the Alan McKean era, probably the best era of Mississippi State football. And that includes Jackie Sherrill era. And listen, I get it. People are like, but Steve, Jackie won the West. He did. There were some peaks and valleys in that thing, though. And that's the thing about Moana always respected, is that even in a rebuilding year, we were still a bowl team. And you can argue, well, there's more bowl games today. That's true. There's also more competition these days in the Southeastern Conference. And so things have changed a lot. So I like the take. And I want to kind of get in a couple more things about the 2025 group. I put some bones up on Gene's page. I'm trying to be more regular with that now that baseball is over. And, you know, we'll be basically doing baseball portal recruiting coverage and kind of keeping you guys abreast of what's happening with baseball and doing football recruiting stuff. But football camps coverage has changed tremendously with all of these official visits. And State's going to have about 20 official visitors in the month of June. We never really done that. We've done a handful of June OVs here and there. But because of the fact that guys can take trips now, they're not going to June camps. You know, the guys that come to June camps are guys that are camping for offers. The guys that already have an offer from you, they're not coming to camp. Things have changed. The dynamic has changed. We talked about, hey, we're going to do Big Dog Camp early on instead of doing it in July. What's because the priority targets wouldn't come? They have no incentive to come. They already have the offer. And so, again, State, about 20, 21 visitors in the month of June. But we were able to get some guys on campus today with the 7-on-7, which is the best day to come to camp if you're in my shoes, right? Because, you know, Micah Jones, tight end from Madison Central, not going to come to camp. But he'll come with his team to compete in the 7-on-7. And so you get the benefit of having that guy on camp. We got some fresh pictures, got a new bio page and pick, and had a chance to speak to a very engaging young man. I spoke to him on the phone with some interviews earlier. Number one, size-wise, he is legit, and you know, he's about 6'4", 240 pounds, and has the frame to carry more mass, but he is truly a flex tight end that fits what we want to do in this offense. And going to be visiting Mississippi State soon. He visited Florida recently, set to go to Arkansas next, and then Mississippi State. And one of the things that I heard throughout this process, it's going to boil down to State and Ole Miss. I can't count out Florida, and I mentioned that in the bone today. I can't. I'll tell you why. Number one, when he's taking those trips out there, you can definitely tell that they're speaking his language. They want to use a tight end that kind of helps out in the blocking a little bit, but they really want to get a guy on the pass pattern. Micah doesn't want to be an additional tackle. He doesn't want to be that attached tight end that, you know, pretty much playing in a three-point stance the whole ballgame. Sometimes the situation dictates that. But by and large, he's a guy that wants to be out there, be able to use that impressive wingspan and be in a bit of a mismatch. I really like him, and I'll be a fan of him no matter where he goes. You certainly hope he comes to Mississippi State. But, an SEC guy in every aspect. And he's a guy that really stands out. It doesn't matter what team they're playing against. You look out there on the field, and he really stands out. And it's not just because of the hair. I mean, he looks like an SEC player running around out there right now, even though he's probably got to put on some pounds. But really like him. Can't say for sure what I think he's going to do. I don't think that he knows at this point. He's kind of taking an open mind in these official visits, and then we'll kind of see how things go. I think State's very much in the mix there. And I do think if he stays in State now, it's going to be Mississippi State. I really do. But I think things have changed a little bit. In the beginning, it was all about State and Ole Miss. But I think now that he's been out and traveled a little bit, But you think about the visits that he has set up, Mississippi State or Arkansas and Florida, what's different about those three? They're all three SEC schools, but what's different? And maybe what does Florida and Arkansas have in common? Well, I'll tell you, they got a head coach on the hot seat. And so what may be true today about those programs may not be true come November. Billy Napier has a tough year this year. He's gone. Sam Pittman has a tough year this year, and we're certainly expecting that. Sam's gone. And so if a young man commits to that coaching staff and they get fired, what happens then? And don't think that's not going to be part of the deliberations. Because, again, Mike is a very intelligent young man, and you can tell he has some people in his life that kind of know what's going on. You know, there's some kids out there from small-town Mississippi. They don't know the big picture, and a lot of it's because people around them don't know the big picture. It's like, well, you know, it's Florida. Well, yeah, it may be Florida, and it may be Arkansas. But when you get, if you commit there and they bring in a new head coach that runs a different offensive scheme, your role within that scheme may change. So when I hear that Arkansas, Florida, Mississippi State are kind of the elevated group, he's still considering LSU and Ole Miss. But when I look at that, I begin to think, you know what? If it boils down to these three, you got to feel good about State's chances because, you know, even if Sam Pittman has a decent year this year and hangs on, the chances of either Billy and Sam hanging around for four more years, I think most people would say you probably wouldn't bet anything on that, right? But Jeff Lebby, you know, first-year coach, going to be some continuity, and you feel like, hey, he's going to be here. And so that's an aspect you got to consider. Really like Cortez Thomas, too. I had a chance to see him last year in camp, and then I saw him against Indianola Gentry back during the season. Gavin Howard didn't make it, and Gavin, of course, is a 2026. I might actually like Gavin a little bit better than Cortez, and I love Cortez. But Gavin couldn't make it today. Had something going on back home. I had a chance to talk to Coach Brown about that. But Cortez really fits Mississippi State. I mean, like when you're around him and you kind of get a chance to talk to him, it's like, yeah, this is a Mississippi State guy. You can kind of get the sense that, you know, this is a guy that probably kind of echoes our values a little bit. Hardworking kid, you know, from small town Mississippi. Of course, he's got some friends here, some former teammates here. And I think Corey Bell's doing a really good job with him. Saw Corey come by and talk to Coach Brown today. Kind of stayed outside of earshot. I don't like to interlope in those conversations because I know my place. And I want those guys to be able to spit. It's more important that those guys speak than I hear what they have to say, right? But Cortez has extremely good length. You know, he is a guy against the fade. Even if he's trailing a half step, he's got the catch radius to get in there and make a play for you. One of the things I love about Holmes County Central players is how competitive they are. They expect to win. They expect to make big plays, but they're not just going to depend on you to make them. They kind of take ownership, right, of team responsibility. And that's a team last year that you know, nearly could have won a state championship. If they'd have had a little more better play on the offensive line, I think they probably do win the state championship. Because I don't know that there's a lot of teams around the state that can match up with them skill player-wise. They always seem to have skill, offense and defense. So you can imagine how good they are in a 7-on-7 situation. They also have a rising tight end that they took off the basketball court, a young man by the name of Julius Mathis. He's a 2026 tight end, probably about 6'4", 215 right now. A guy that'll only get bigger and stronger, right? And so that's the deal that I think out about too, is like, you just when you think, okay, you got this done, and you got more and more coming. You know, it's like the fountain never runs dry down there in Lexington. It just doesn't. They always just seem to have players. And of course, Mississippi State's done exceptionally well there. Holmes County Central's been good. And ran into Terrence Hibbler today. Looks great. Great. Came up to me, said hello, and I barely recognized him. And that's the truth. This guy's put on some good weight. Kind of talked to him, bro, how things going? Things going good? Things going good? Very happy, you know. Asked him, I said, hey, Coach Turner on you a lot? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I like to hear, you know. But, yeah, really excited about him. And really, again, it's kind of a pipeline there. You know, you remember years ago, South Panola was great. They were a dominant program, one of the best in the country. And they kind of became a pipeline school for Ole Miss. Kind of made sense, too. I mean, just up the road there on Highway 6. But, yeah, to see Holmes County Central continue to be a winning-type program and turn out, you know, recruits regularly, it's very good that we have a connection down there. Super good. Super, super good. Tupelo, folks, I had a chance to talk to Jaden Hill today. That is a young man that you should be proud of. You talk about a very polished and articulate young man, and he's just a junior in high school. But he carries himself like a young man, right? He's not just some teenage kid. He carries himself, and that is a testament to his parents and everybody around him. Very respectful young man. I can tell you, this is the kind of guy that goes to media day someday. Really, really impressed with him. And then you see him out there on the field. He's not just a ball carrier. You know, and I love guys that are team guys. When Tupelo won the game that I was watching, Jaden went on the field. But once they scored to win, he was among the first to go out there and celebrate with his teammates. Those are the kids you win with. You know, it's not the old sullen guy over there that's pouting because he didn't get his opportunity. You know, Jaden Hill appears to be a guy that's like, hey, I just want to win. You know, if I'm carrying the rock or I'm catching it or my teammate is, it's all the same. You know, but very, very impressed with him. It was my first personal interaction with him. Obviously, I've seen his film. But very, very impressed with him in every aspect. And, of course, he is a Mississippi State legacy. His grandfather played at Mississippi State. Just about everybody in his family came to Mississippi State. So you like that. Got a very lengthy offer sheet already as a junior. Got some big-time offers out there. And it's the thing that I think about, too, right? We talk about how things have changed, right? There's the NIL and transfer portal and there's all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, when you get a chance to play for the team that you grew up cheering for, that is difficult for other teams to overcome. I mean, what value do you place on that? And again, the self-loathing Mississippi State fan saying, but Steve, he's not going to turn down a bunch of money. Well, we got some money too. You know, we understand how it all works. We know how the bread is buttered. But what value do you place on that? It's like, hey, I could play for my favorite team, the team that I grew up in my front yard, pretending that I was, you know, Josh Robinson or Dak Prescott, Vic Ballard, right? I mean, these are the names that you grow up with in this new generation. You know, I wanted to be this guy. Who's my favorite player? You know, I remember interviewing Jonathan Banks years ago, and I love Jonathan. I do. And every time I see him or Mallory, I always speak to them. They are our family. It's true. But I remember interviewing Jonathan Banks, and I was like, he's like, I've been a Mississippi State guy my whole life. And I said, well, who's your favorite player? And you know what he said? Some of you will remember this. I'll jar your memories. Jonathan Banks says, Damon Glanton is my favorite player. Now, you had to be a legit Mississippi State fan to pull up Damon Glanton. Right? Many of you probably remember Damon Glanton. Damon Glanton, I'll give you your point of reference here. He's the guy that knocked Jimmy Johns out on that kickoff. Probably would be called targeting today. But it's kind of affectionately known now as being Jimmy Johns. True. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's college football. But the fact that Jonathan Banks could pull Damon Glanton's name out of his hat told me he was legit. I get the same vibe from talking to Jaden Hill, that this guy is legit. You know, this guy knows Mississippi State. And I asked him, you know, who's your favorite player kind of growing up? We talked about that. We talked about the pro side. And Saquon Barkley, you know, and he is a guy, too, that when you see him, when you see him on the hoof, as they say, he looks like a Power 5 player. He really does. And so that's something to be thinking about, too, because a lot of guys you get that, you know, that they're a work in progress. They all are in some respects, but you get some guys that just don't have college-level size and strength. And this is a guy that's a junior in high school, and he looks like an SEC player right now. Very, very impressed. So, again, Tupelo High School, folks, you should be impressed with him. He is a great representative of your community and of your high school. And we look ready to go back and you know, and see him this summer and see him this fall. So we look forward to watching his recruitment But we begin to think about all those things, right? You know, even in the summer, it's like, I got to get out there and see this kid play. It's true. And you should, too, if you live in that community. Yeah, I'm always going to encourage you to watch from afar. Get in the stands. You want to ring a cowbell, that's fine. But please don't approach prospects on the sidelines and things like that. Don't do that. Don't do it. If you got a relationship with them, it's one thing. Hey, good game, whatever. But, no, don't do any of that kind of silliness. But, when you've got a big-time player in your neck of the woods, you should go out and see them. It's one of the fun things about this job is going and seeing these guys. I saw Fat Clark today. Looks like $1 million. And the guy just got here. You know, remember having a chance to go see him play last year against Grenada. And speaking of that, how about Xavion Cotton, a guy that we saw in that game, now has an offer from Mississippi State? I'm not surprised in the least. I know an SEC guy when I see one. I talk myself into it. When you see a guy like that that can run like he does, with a catch radius like he does, and a frame like he does, and you begin to think about, what he can do, you know, that's an important part of all this stuff. You got to go get guys that make sense. You know, it's kind of like, all the old deer hunting days, where it's like you're kind of leaning around, see if you can't put some horns on that doe. It's kind of like that watching film sometimes. It's like you just keep waiting for something to happen so you can say, hey, this guy's a really good player. But the bottom line is this, if you go to a high school football game and you got to talk yourself into a kid, he's not an SEC player. So we'll be back at camp tomorrow. It's another prospect camp. So probably you're not going to see a lot of big names. There'll be a couple guys that come work out there, but and we'll do our best to give you coverage. Justin will be out there with me too. And Rion's on the road again this weekend, trying to get out there and see players as much as we can. Try to get you guys as much information as we possibly can. And I'll be honest with you, and it's so interesting too. There hadn't been a lot going on. You say, but Steve, the spring evaluation period came up and there's camp. But I'll be honest with you again, there's not a lot of the big name kids coming to camp. And your coaches really haven't been pushing for a lot of commitments yet. I mean, of course, there are some guys that could call and commit today, and you'd absolutely take them. But you got to think, these guys got here. They didn't have a chance to do a ton of junior recruiting or evaluating. A lot of these guys are coming from different parts of the country that maybe hadn't seen several of these kids. And so you take some time, because in this state especially, if you offer a kid, you better be willing to take him. Because if you offer a kid and you don't take him, it's going to be kind of chilly next time you walk into the high school. And so I'm perfectly okay with where we are. And I know some people are like, hey, we're falling behind. Guys, it doesn't matter how you start, it's how you finish. And I would much rather take guys that can play here than go get a couple kids early just to get our name in the paper, only to have to drop them late to get our name in the paper for the wrong reason later. It's important to understand. You take your time, trust your evaluation, prioritize and your pecking order, and then go get your guys. So that's how I see it. And, again, look for coverage from camp all weekend. And I'll have an interview with Jaden Hill tomorrow. And I'll have an interview with Cortez Thomas tomorrow. I'll do those before I head to camp. And then we'll run, Saturday stuff, Sunday stuff later. And so we look forward to you guys doing that. Of course, I've got a lot of riding to do this weekend. Got to finish up some things. But it's fun to get out there because this is kind of like the beginning of it. For me, right? I mean, in the beginning, I wrote some player features and things like that and transitioned over to recruiting, man, 20 years ago. It's nuts, man. And it's so interesting. Like, I'll meet people out and they'll say, hey, my husband grew up reading you. I'm like, well, how old's your husband? And he's always 30. I'm like, what? How long have I been doing this? Well, it's been since 1997. But it's interesting. I mean, it is. I mean, I'm at some point, I'll age out, but I'll tell you, I still get such a thrill. It's just like talking to Julius Mathis today. Yeah, I'm sitting there watching him, and then I was like, Coach, what about that kid? And he's like, oh, yeah. Coach Brown's like, oh, yeah, he's going to be one of the next ones. Kind of get a little backstory. So I go up and, hey, I want to get your picture so we can have build out your profile page. And to see that kid grin the way that he did, I mean, it's like those kind of things matter. It does to me. That stuff never gets old. Knowing that you're helping a young person, kind of get some visibility, even if they don't come to Mississippi State. For people within our state, young people that are working hard for an opportunity, and so many of them, the first people in their families to go to college, and they're able to do it by football. As Mike Leach used to say, you need people that need football. But to see that kind of stuff, I mean, you know, people talk about before, you know, we're kingmakers. I don't know if I go that far with it, but I'll tell you this. Anytime that we can help a young man or a young lady that is aspiring to get their education or part of their education paid for through athletics, we want to help them. We do. And, you know, I hired a graphics guy last year because I got really, really, really perturbed with somebody else, the way that they handle their business, and I'm not going to get into all that stuff, but it's ridiculous. And we hired a graphics guy, and now we're doing – my graphics guy is doing graphics for people over the country. And we really started doing that for our Mississippi kids, but he's done such a good job. Nathan Purvis is his name, done such a great job for us that he's being recognized. And my hope is that it turns into something bigger for him because he works so quickly and does such a good job. Now, that's an important part of this. But I like my team. I do. And, you know, we have a lot of people that were able to announce their commitments, you know, and just like, you know, Kenny today, you know, we already had our stuff together because of the fact that we already had a relationship with the guy, you know. And so we want to make sure that we're giving you the best quality of information over jeanspage.com we possibly can. And one of the things that I never want to do is have to come back later and say, you know what, man, we got beat on this because we didn't work. That's just not going to be the case. All right, next segment of the show is the Top 10 List. It's always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. You know, you need people on the inside, right? It's true. You need people with know-how and experience. You think you know the ins and outs. You don't. Don't try to be a know-it-all. Work with a know-it-all, somebody that's been there and done that. That's Blair Chandler, 23 years of experience in the mortgage industry. You can reach Blair directly. It's 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Guys, let me share this with you. Don't overthink this. Whether you're looking to buy a home for the first time, maybe you want that game day condo, which may be more affordable than you think, because Blair knows how to structure loans. It makes sense. Yeah, it's true. Maybe you've had a life reset. Maybe you're having a transfer. Blair's licensed in several states. Blair can get you taken care of. Now, if you just want to go through, you know, go through the motions and then get turned down later, Blair's probably not your guy. Now, there are some people, obviously, that are in a very negative situation. But maybe you're perhaps you're a subprime mortgage candidate. Maybe you got a non-conforming property. You need somebody who can go out there and go to war for you. It's Blair Chandler. Again, that's Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Be sure and check him out today. Okay. I am about to provide some clarity about the one of the greatest years in music of my life. And you all have seen the memes, that kind of stuff, about all these albums came out within about 6 weeks of each other. And everybody has their favorites. So we're going to go over the best rock albums of 1991. You know, 84 was a great year in music. 88 was a great year in music. 91, a legendary year in music. It's true. It's true. And by the time we get to the end of this list, you're going to be like, Steve, this may be the best year of my lifetime. Now, what you had here was kind of the last gasp of kind of the hair metal stuff in 91. You still had some legendary albums that came out that year. But of course, the record companies, things were changing, music was changing, things were evolving, and the 80s rock scene in many respects, as much as I love it, was beginning to get kind of bloated and very cookie cutter-ish. It's true. It's like, hey, let's come out with a banger, we'll come back with a power ballad, we come back with a deep cut, you know, be sure and check your eyeliner. Things were changing. And then all of a sudden, we had three or four guys that looked like they just finished up a double shift at Subway, just walk out on stage in a flannel shirt. So it was less about image and even less about music. It's true. The instrumentation of the early 90s was not good. There weren't a lot of great players in the early 90s. It's true. You may not want to admit it because you're so emotionally invested, but it's true. I mean, honest to goodness, how many guitar players can you name from the early 90s? Honestly. I'll wait. You can't. because music changed, and really you had a bunch of rhythm players. And you say, well, Steve, they got rid of the guitar solo. Yeah, because guys couldn't play. It's true. Like, I go back to the 70s, you know, those guys could really play. And most of what they did in the studio was live. They just do take after take after take. They got it right. I mean, you think Brian May and Freddie Mercury and those guys didn't just toll away in some studio out there? You know, nowadays, you can, you know, record an album in, you know, a weekend. It's a different deal. You got all these Pro Tools and things like that and auto-tune. You didn't have all that stuff back then. Those guys could really play. You get to the 80s, you know, probably the peak for guitar playing as a collective group. But you get to the early 90s, there weren't a lot of great players. Weren't a lot of great drummers. And listen, Travis Barker's a lot of fun, but technically he's not on the same level of me, those guys in the 80s. Don't get me wrong, he's the best part of Blink 182 for you early 2000s music nerds. But here we go. Top 10 albums from 1991, and we're going to do it my way. Number 10, and we couldn't do 91 without mentioning Nevermind from Nirvana. It's true. So the song we're going to go with is Endless and Nameless, because it's the last song on the album, and mercifully the thing ends. Like, but Steve, why didn't you pick Smells Like Teen Spirit? You like a song, okay? A song. It's true. You're like, but Steve, there was In Bloom, which makes no sense. It's just a bunch of cacophony with a good bass line. It's true. Those are my thoughts, but you can't deny the influence that Nirvana had at the time. There's not a lot of bands these days playing like Nirvana, except for these garage bands that can't carry a tune. That's my feeling. Number nine, it's U2's Octang Baby. Love this album. Really, this, in many respects, kind of made me kind of embrace U2. And 91 was a tough year for your good friend and host. Probably most difficult year of my life. In many respects, I wrote a whole chapter about that one year in When the Bottom Falls. Because, you know, if I tell you I love you today, I do. If I told you 91, I didn't mean it. I didn't love myself. But there was a song that, let's just say at times I would do some recreational narcotics, and I would put this video on, and I would watch the video because it enhanced the experience. It's a track called Mysterious Ways, and I could not even listen to that for a long time after I got clean and sober because it gave me flashbacks. It's true. But U2, legendary band, and of course they downloaded their album into our Apple Music library or iTunes library, and we didn't want it. All right, number eight. And many of you would probably have this album higher on your list, and I could make that case. I was intrigued, but when I first got into this album, I had Mother's Milk, and I had a huge, huge, very expensive Red Hot Chili Peppers Mother's Milk poster that got lost in a tornado of addiction. I'd still like to know. Somebody probably stole it. I think it was expensive. I mean, I'm talking $60 back in 91 to buy that poster. A poster. But it was like a limited edition. It was on this special paper. You could touch it. It was great. But Blood Sugar Sex Magik, man, that's probably the album. In many respects, it pulled a lot of people into the Peppers. True story. I mean, I was with those guys back, you know, with True Men Don't Kill Coyotes years ago. We were on the cutting edge. But this is the breakthrough album. Of course, it had Under the Bridge and so many others. I'm going to go with one of my favorites that maybe you guys aren't quite as familiar with. It's Suck My Kiss. Because your mouth was made to suck my kiss. That's number eight on your list. Number seven, and you're going to hear a little more about these guys. It was a collaborative album. It was actually put together before Pearl Jam got famous. It was Temple the Dog, of course, written in memory of Andrew Wood, the lead singer of Mother Love Bone, who was really one of the godfathers of the Seattle scene. And for those of you that love that Mother Love Bone album, Apple, and I know many of you do, they have recently, Stone Gossard recently, well, I guess in the last couple of years, they have released Malfunction, which is the band that predated Mother Love Bone that Andrew Wood was a part of. And Stone produced all this stuff. And you can go check it out. It's super, super cool. But the Temple of the Dog album, I love it from start to finish. A lot of you know Hunger Strike. I've said before, I want that played at my funeral. One of my favorite songs, and I think it's one of Chris Cornell's shining moments as a vocalist, is a great track called Wooden Jesus. That's number seven from the Temple of the Dog album that was recently remastered in recent years. All right, number six. This is one of those albums I look back in my life and say, you know what? If I had never had this album, my life may not have been as enriched the way that it was. True story. I was living in Hattiesburg at the time and really got into this band. And many people were like, hey, this is the next big thing. And I was kind of reluctant in the beginning. And then I put the album on in its entirety. Because everybody, you know, back in those days, everybody just played the singles. Like you could buy maybe a CD or a cassette single, but more times than not, you had to buy the album. So I bought the album. And I absolutely fell in love with it. It's Smashing Pumpkins' debut album, Gish. And I'm going to go with Siva is my track off that album. And the guitar on this, of course, it's very unlike the 80s. It's true, you know. But Billy Corgan's a great rhythm player. And, you know, my favorite album from them is Melancholy and Infinite Sadness. It's a double album, and I absolutely love the vocal delivery. And, you know, on Gish, Billy's kind of finding himself a little bit. And you got Rhinoceros and Mayonnaise and Disarm and all that. There's so many great tracks on there. Cherub Rock. But Steve is the one that kind of like lured me in. And so that's your number six track today. The number five, an iconic performer who's still out there performing, well, maybe not on concert, but doing some things out there, did a collaboration with Post Malone some time ago on the Hollywood is Bleeding album. It's Ozzy Osbourne. The great album, No More Tears, with Mike Inez on bass. I think Randy Castillo was on drums, and of course, Zakk Wylde on guitar. I love that lineup. I did. Of course, Mike Inez has been with Alice in Chains for a long time now. You think about that, leaving Ozzy to join Alice in Chains. There's a lot about Alice in Chains, right? We could go with the title track, but I elected to go with Mr. Tinker Train. Absolutely phenomenal track. It ends kind of abruptly. I think it's Zakk Wylde just really, really, really shines on this track. So Mr. Tinker Train from Ozzy Osbourne from the No More Tears album, number five. All right, number four, you know, eventually we'd get here and some people are going to say, Steve, this should be number one. And maybe it should be to you. It's not to me. But I love this album, and I think you could pick any song off here and it would be a great representation of who Pearl Jam is. And I remember so many times, Dan and I were just starting to date back then, and this was in many respects kind of the soundtrack. And, yeah, you could go with Black, Release, so many. And I remember when the Versus tour came to New Orleans at Kiefer Arena, and we went to go see them. Urge Overkill opened. We've had them on the show before. And we're front row. Front row for Pearl Jam. And it's the same night they got arrested at Pat O'Brien's with Jack McDowell from the Chicago White Sox. Pretty crazy stuff. But the album 10, I think in many respects, is probably like if you just like grunge and you just like drop D tuning and you just like, hey, this is a good representation of the era. I think the composition on the Pearl Jam 10 album really far exceeds anything else at the time. And certainly more than Nirvana. I think the Nirvana album is, you know, a couple of decent tracks and then a bunch of filler. There is no filler on Pearl Jam 10. And I would have that argument with anybody. The Pearl Jam 10 album is better than Nevermind. It is. It is. Number three, and you know my love for Chris Cornell and his catalog, and really, really got into this album, this particular album. One of my roommates in treatment was an Ole Miss fan, and he's like, hey, dude, you got to listen to these guys. And I said, yeah, well, you know, I've got, you know, Loud Love, or Louder Than Love. And he goes, yeah, but he said, listen, just listen to the lyrics. You know, really, really get into this. So you get the liner notes out. We used to do that. And you just listen to the songs, you read the lyrics, and you're like, hey, he's kind of singing to me. But it's Soundgarden's Bad Motorfinger. And I've got a bad motor finger tattoo. It's true. And with these more well-known albums, and I kind of skipped over the Pearl Jam song. I screwed up. Your song from Pearl Jam 10 is Why Go. It's not one of the hits. And it's really to kind of demonstrate how great the album is. You can pick any song, but Why Go is great. I love it. But from the Soundgarden Bad Motorfinger album, we're going to go with Holy Water. Holy Water. You can say, but Steve, there's Jesus Christ Pose and Rusty Cage. Exactly. Because it's not just an album with hits. It's an album from start to finish that is absolutely outstanding. That's one of the things about this generation I don't know that you guys fully appreciate. You know, there's so much single-serving music these days. Back in those days, an album took you on a journey. And you listened to the album in their entirety. You didn't, you know, nowadays you listen to stuff on repeat. You find the one song, you wear it out, you're sick of it. But when I would put on Bad Motor Finger, I would just push play and just go do about my day and enjoy this album. So Holy Water, number three. Number two, and I suspect that Roy and I may have a disagreement about the top two. But probably not a big disagreement, because I think you can make a case for either one of these albums. Number two is Metallica's Black Album. Again, another one of those albums, all killer, no filler. There's no endless nameless on this album. But I am going to go with a deeper track, because I think this song was not nearly as maybe commercial as some of the other ones. And I think in many respects, it reminds me of maybe kind of Injustice for All a little bit. Kind of a throwback. But it's of Wolf and Man. That's number two on this one. Again, it just kind of shows the totality of this album. I mean, you know Enter Sandman and Wherever I May Roam and Nothing Else Matters. You know all those, right? They're all the hits. But what makes these albums, in my estimation, better than the some of the earlier albums on our list is the fact that there's not any skip songs. And this is one of those. Number one, though, and we had two versions of this. We had Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, so I had to pick between those two. And those of you that don't remember, when Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 came out, like people like camped outside to get them because Appetite for Destruction was just absolutely a runaway hit. And so you couldn't wait to get more new material from Guns N' Roses. And so they released a double album. And Use Your Illusion 2 debuted at number 1, and Use Your Illusion 1 debuted at number 2. And the reason that was is because You Could Be Mine, which was the first single, was on Use Your Illusion 2. Both of these, in my estimation, are absolute masterpieces. But I went with Use Your Illusion 1. And I'm going to go with one of my favorite tracks. Again, a bit of a deeper track on this. And again, we used to listen to these albums in their entirety. But it's going to go Double Talk and Jive from Guns N' Roses. That's your number one track. So that's my list of best rock albums from 1991. I hope it helps you. I do. Because some of you have been fed a false narrative by people with a BS degree in revisionist history. I think these albums are far superior to Nevermind, but I would be remiss if I didn't include them just because you guys like them. But I think when you go back and look at the totality of the albums that are in our, especially in our top six, I think you look at that and say, you know what? That was a legendary time in music. And you know, even when I got number seven with the Chili Peppers, that album has got a couple tracks that are kind of clunkers. That's why I rated it a little bit lower. Some huge hits, but I don't think that you could just put it on and say, hey, every song here could have been a single. I think when you get to the top six there, every single one of those albums, every one of those songs could have been a single, especially when you get in the top four. It's true. I really, really like this list, and I hope you guys enjoy the list. And you may disagree, and that's okay. I know some of you have been brainwashed, but I lived through it. I was alive through this. I didn't go to Spencer's Gift and get a free T-shirt and all of a sudden start repping a band I didn't know, you know, and to each their own. But that's my list. And again, a legendary year of music, but those are the albums to me that really stand apart. We didn't have REM on there. I've never really been an REM fan. I know many of you are. I have been to the steeple there in Athens, Georgia. I did make my pilgrimage because I do respect REM. And I remember one year for Christmas, my lovely sister Kim Kennedy, who I love dearly, and I don't get to see nearly as often as I'd like. One year for Christmas, she bought me REM tape. I think it was green, maybe. It is the only time in my life that I have ever like frowned at a gift, and I feel bad about that now. And she was super cool about it. She goes, well, hey, we'll just go to the record store and buy something else. And we did. We did. And I don't know what she did with the album. I probably owe her an apology, but I was just a teenager. But But yeah, R.E.M. had a really good album come out. I guess it was Green that came out that year. I know many of you like R.E.M., and that's okay. I don't begrudge you that. I think those guys have a huge following for a reason. It just didn't resonate with me, right? The truth of the matter is, I think R.E.M. is a better band than Nirvana, and I don't think it's close. And you may disagree. And it's so funny, too, the Nirvana nerds always come at me and say, why do you hate on Nirvana? Well, I don't hate on Nirvana. I just tell my opinion of Nirvana, and I tell you that they're basically, you know, just kind of one step up from a one-hit wonder. I think Heart-Shaped Box is a really, really good song. And I think the original version is far superior than any of these covers that we hear out here these days. I think it's important to understand, I think that's more in tune with what Kurt wanted. And if you've done your research, and I have, he really was very combative during those In Utero sessions because he didn't want to make another corporate rock album. It's true. And never mind, if you really dig and you don't just listen to the peripheral stuff, it's the album he never wanted to make. You know, Bleach and those, he wanted to be more punk and be irreverent. He wanted to be famous, but never as famous as he became. And I think in many respects, Kurt Cobain, God rest his soul, I think he was part of a machine and part of a roller coaster that he never bought a ticket for. I think there were a lot of people out there that saw an opportunity to change music, and Nirvana, in many respects, kind of became a vehicle to do that. And I think in many respects, he was exploited. I truly believe that. And I think it's a very sad, sad story. And Kurt, of course, was he was a guy that had his demons. And I remember watching the documentary of Kurt Cobain. I mean, I watch all this music stuff, right? And he was actually in rehab with Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses. And the two became friends. And you're like, well, Nirvana was like all against Guns N' Roses. That's all an act, man. I mean, there's a fraternity, not just between musicians, but between addicts. And especially when we're getting in recovery, it's like, you know, you kind of begin to rely on each other. And Duff McKagan was a guy that actually tried to save Kurt Cobain's life. And this is all after the whole MTV thing, you know, when they have the big showdown and Dave Grohl gets on there and like, hi, Axel, that so many people kind of celebrate is that there was like some kind of funeral for Guns N' Roses. But Duff never held any grudges over that. And I think that's important to understand. But yeah, you can love Nevermind and Nirvana as much as you want to. I don't think any less of you, and I hope you don't think any less of me. I just think that they were probably maybe the fourth or fifth best band of their era, not the pioneering band. And I'll say it, it's going to make some people uncomfortable, to be honest with you. I think if we hadn't had the tragic ending to Kurt Cobain's life, and there's a lot of theories about what happened there, and I don't really know which one I agree with. Now, some people are thinking that he was murdered, and maybe he was. He left a suicide note, and so that kind of leads me to think he killed himself. And he had, of course, the accidental overdose over in Paris, and it seems like he just wanted to get off the ride. And the truth of the matter is I think if people stopped pulling on Kurt Cobain, if people had maybe just let him take some time off, that he'd probably be alive today. And that's the sad part about all this stuff. But I think you would view that band much differently had they had a longer tenure. It's just my feeling. And you may disagree. I'm not in any way trying to be disrespectful to Kurt Cobain or his memory. I just think that there were a lot of people around him that were more talented than he was. But there's no doubt that, in many respects, they raised an army of people that were just kind of sick of, the Revlon rockers in many respects. You know, it's like the whole thing. And I thought about this as one of the very first times that I heard Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's like, well, here we are now, entertain us. And I think there's some irony in all that. It's like Kurt Cobain's like, well, we all came to your show, and it's just kind of the same old thing. You know, you're just not entertaining anymore. And in many respects, I think that was kind of a message and a harbinger of things to come for 80s metal. It really was. And some would say, well, Steve, you hate these guys because, you know, they kind of, you know, put the nail in the coffin of 80s metal. And the truth of the matter is, you know, Soundgarden had already sold 2 million records before Nirvana had a major record deal. So the evolution was already beginning. People forget, you know, Soundgarden went out on the road. Alice in Chains went out with Van Halen. You know, and I saw an interview with Sammy Hagar recently, and he goes, I wasn't scared of those guys, but I was kind of fearful. It's like, hey, those guys are super cool, so their fans will come and say, hey, Alice in Chains went out with Van Halen, so Van Halen must be cool too. You know, And I get that aspect of it. It's pretty ingenious, to be honest with you. But Alice in Chains, and of course Dirt came out in 92, but Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, these bands were far superior. So I've opined on this long enough. But thanks, as always, of your support for the Top 10 List. Our next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. Chances are you do, too. If you don't, it's because you've never been. Yeah. Campus Bookmart has served this wonderful fan base for many, many years, and I'm a big proponent of shopping and buying local. You love Starkville? Let's keep a Starkville business in great shape, because they're going to do the same thing for you. If you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, look no further than Campus Bookmart. Whether it's time to update the wardrobe, or maybe you just need some new Mississippi State decorative items around your home, maybe you got some graduation gifts to buy, or perhaps a wedding gift, I don't know, you know. They got something that'll fit whatever your needs are. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. If you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. It's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Yeah, it's true. Campus Bookmart. Be sure and check them out today. Okay. A lot of people freaking out about the baseball portal, and we're not even a week in. Now, here's what I'll tell you. There are a lot of schools out there that are going to stockpile, and it's not going to work out. What I mean by that is there's a lot of guys that are in the transfer portal that aren't going to make the roster. Happened last year to us. You know, we took Nate Lamb early on, and people were like, hey, what about this? And, you know, hey, it just didn't work out. And he didn't make the roster. And there are a lot of teams out there, got a couple commitments. And listen, if you look at the number, you say look at the quantity for some guys, and then go look at the quality. Guys, if we've got a guy coming up from the G5 that's got an ERA of 8 or 9, we don't want them. We don't. And there are a lot of people out there just trying to kind of get their name in the paper and create some urgency. Now, unless something changes in the next 24 hours, Mississippi State will have their first commitment out of the NCAA transfer portal for the summer for baseball. You'll have to tune in to jeanspage.com tomorrow. We kind of got everything set up, got our graphic ready. I'm supposed to interview the young man tomorrow morning. We've traded some text messages today, and he's set to announce on Saturday afternoon. I'm not going to give you a lot of hints because I want the young man to have his moment. But that's the first in what we expect to be 7 or 8 commitments from the transfer portal. And you say, but Steve, you know, we've got a lot we've got to replace here. Well, you know, there's some guys out there that maybe a little bit farther along in their development than you realize. But we've got to get some difference makers offensively in this portal. I think you've got to get a first and a third baseman. You got to get corner infielders. I think there is a good chance that you're going to get Dylan Cup and or Dave Mershon back. I'm probably more on the fence about Mercy because we just don't know what's going to happen with the draft. And David has 2 years of leverage to work with. And so, yeah, they're going to have to pay him. And depending on where he gets drafted, and listen, here's the thing too. If they can't come to terms on a signing bonus, they won't draft him. And it'd be a situation like if he goes, you know, top 5 rounds, yeah, he's done. But he's not going to be drafted if he won't come to terms. And with a 20-round draft, it's not like it used to be where they would just draft everybody, including backup quarterbacks at the University of Florida. And so what if we lived in a world that we were able to get a couple corner infielders with double-digit home runs at their previous schools? And let's say you keep Mercy and Cup, and you bring in Dante Norrie to play center field, and maybe you've got Nolan Stevens, a guy that can play every day in right, or maybe he's a DH, Bryce Chance in left, Ross Highfield behind the plate. All of a sudden, you start feeling pretty good about that lineup, right? And so we've got to go out and get some pitching, and we're only going to be as good as our pitching will take us. And that was the thing last year. We thought, like, hey, we had the pieces to have an elite offense. It never really came together. We showed some flashes, but we did not, I think, achieve our full potential or realize our full potential offensively this year. There are some weeks, Hunter Hines and Dakota Jordan, you just couldn't throw to them. You just couldn't do it because they'd kill you. We didn't get enough consistency. And people say, well, you know, Steve, that's got to be coaching. I'd say, well, I don't know that our talent level maybe is what we expected it to be. And he said, but Steve, the coaches recruited him. All that's true. And so you kind of got to fix that. Right now. And I don't think you can just depend on high school players or guys that were reserved last year. I think you've got to be able to go out and get some portal guys and come in and be difference makers. And a couple guys mentioned, hey, Steve, you didn't mention this pitcher or that pitcher in your breakdown earlier in the week. Well, it's just they weren't major contributors. It doesn't mean that I've given up on them. It just means that, you know, there's still some things left to prove for all of them. But, portal traffic is about to pick up. And we got a couple guys in. There'll probably be a couple more that may transfer. You've seen a lot of these goodbye Stark Vegas posts, things of that nature. A lot of people think, oh, well, you know, Cal Stevens leaving. Well, yeah, he's going to be drafted. Nate Dohm's leaving. Well, Nate's going to be drafted. You know, Nate obviously has the opportunity. If either one of those guys want to come back, we absolutely would take him. We're not shoving him out the door, you know. That's important to understand. You know, Dakota Jordan, if he doesn't get what he wants, yeah, he's a happy, welcome to have him back. Goodness, if Dakota Jordan comes back, he's probably a top 10 pick next year. But he's going to have to turn down some serious coin to make that possible, and you run the risk of injury and things like that. And so, Dakota Jordan's gone. You know, for all intents and purposes, he's gone. But I share that with you. A lot of people say, hey, it's going to be a complete rebuild. I don't agree with that. Obviously, we've got to do well in the portal, and I think 7 or 8 guys in the portal, probably 3 of those guys need to be pitchers, if not more. But again, you start thinking about the way this thing will break loose here. You'd like to have some other offensive pieces. I think that was one of the things that we struggled with this year is because, you know, when you have a guy that maybe is struggling, you couldn't afford to sit him because you didn't have enough options on the bench that were better. And so you need to go out and get some pieces. Yeah, I mean, House is a guy last year that we saw some big things with him in the fall. He didn't get on the field this year, doing some big things in summer already. But that's another guy, another piece. You need some offensive depth. And so I think you probably go out and get 4 or 5 guys that are position players that will come in and compete because we're going to need some power. You know, we just don't have any returning right now. And you say, well, you know, Jackson McKenzie's a big physical kid, big left-handed bat. Yep, absolutely, absolutely. But not much in the way of experience. Your production, ton of potential. And, you know, how many times have we been through this, right? Just somebody comes out of nowhere. Again, we talked about Dante Norrie a few times on the show. You know, the thing with him is it's not going to boil down to money. Because he comes from money, right? And so a lot of people in his family want him to come to college. And, of course, if he gets life-changing money, which there's a possibility of that happening, he's going to take it. But we're hearing some very positive things. And Dante Norrie is a guy that's an absolute monster. You know, is he Dakota Jordan? No, he's not. Doesn't have that same physical skill. But he is a guy that can hit for average. He can hit for power. Steal bases for you. You put him out there in center field. And I'll tell you, I had another scout tell me that he's actually a more physical player. But defensively, as far as playing gap to gap, the guy that he reminds him of is Enrique Bradfield from Vanderbilt. You remember what a pain he was, right, to play against that guy. Anything in the air, it seemed like he could run it down. And it's kind of the same thing on the base pass. He is a guy that's a walking stolen base guy, you know. And so if you don't go get a center fielder in the portal, people are going to be like, well, why didn't we do this? Well, it's because we got a guy with a first-round grade coming in. He's going to be a 2-year draft-eligible guy too, so he'll be here probably for 2 years. And then have the opportunity to make millions of dollars. And so I share all that just because I think it's important to understand it's not the rebuild that some of our fans are making it out to be because there's some names you just don't know. And, of course, you know, we've got to do good in the portal. It's as simple as that. I don't think there's enough right now coming in and coming back for us to say, hey, we're definitely a regional team that's going to be in contention to host. I think what you do in the portal right now will determine that. And, again, I like what I'm hearing. Here's my thing about that. The last 2 years, there have been some situations where I've liked what I was hearing, and things did not come to fruition. We knew that the whole LSU, Mississippi State, Paul Skeens thing was going to be difficult to overcome, and it was. And then you see Luke Holtmann do the same thing last year. And I began to think about what would Mississippi State look like this year with Luke Holtmann, and what would LSU look like without Luke Holtmann? Completely different dynamic. You know, that's how important one player like that could make a big difference. It would take us from being a good team to probably a great team. It would take LSU from being a good team to pretty mediocre team. And because for a while there, he was all they could count on weekends. And so we need to win some marquee matchups. That's one of the things that I think when you look in the last couple of years, have we gotten some good players out of the portal? Yes. But have we won the big sweepstakes? No, we haven't. And I think that would be a signal that we're really on the ascension too. Not just the fact that we won 40 games, but now all of a sudden you put yourself in a situation where guys are like, yeah, I want to go be part of that. Mississippi State is back. They're in contention to potentially host and go to deep in the postseason next year. I want to be a part of that. We haven't had that luxury the last 2 years. Because people are like, you didn't even make Hoover. You know, I can't go spend my last year of college baseball playing on a team that's going to be scuffling the whole year and not have an opportunity to play in the postseason. You know, well, now it's a much different dynamic. That's important to understand. We have to take full advantage of that. We have to. And, you know, hopefully we've got enough NIL money in the coffers that we can make this awfully interesting. You know, simple as that. But, yeah, there's some names out there, some visitors. And, yeah, they're a little bit, you know, they're a little bit careful with all that stuff. You know, because I think people need to understand, too, this is where it's different. It's a partial scholarship sport, right? Well, you figure at the very least in football and basketball, okay, well, everybody gets an NIL deal, but everybody's education's paid for. That's just not the case in baseball and softball and sports like that. It's just not the deal. You know, you've got to be in a situation where if you go out there and you offer a kid 65% scholarship and he continues to take visits, well, all you've done is just kind of set the bar. And so you're kind of mindful of that. Other people say, yeah, but so-and-so puts us out here. And, you know, a lot of that stuff you got to take with a grain of salt. And I mean, I don't know, it's one of the things that I got sick and tired of putting out like the pregame football list. Yeah, I could put out 90 names. These guys are expected to make it. And if one kid doesn't make it, well, what happened? Why didn't he come? It's 89 of the 90 came. Well, but this so-and-so didn't come. It just ruins the weekend. You know, there's so much of that because, yeah, it's about conveying an expectation. And so, I do expect us to have our first portal commitment of the 2024 portal recruiting cycle Saturday afternoon. So be sure and check in with us over at jeanspage.com. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And when you do, their Facebook page is going to come up. You can go check it out, look at all the pictures, the amenities, the things that are available to you. And listen, there's no better place to stay in the Golden Triangle area. When you're coming up here for party, for play, for work, you know, how nice would it be to have everybody under one roof and you've got some common work areas that everybody can kind of retreat to their own quarters at night instead of going out and getting 5 hotel rooms and wondering where Bob went, you know. Where's Bob? I don't know. He went to the room, you know. Can't find him, you know. It'd be nice to have everybody together. But more importantly, when you speak of togetherness, you think of family. How great would it be, Grandma and Grandpa, you know, maybe just, hey, let's just all take a weekend together this summer. You know, maybe we can't all afford to go to the beach, and maybe you want to bring everybody in, and maybe you can't afford to take everybody to Disney, but you still want to have everybody together. Why don't you rent out the Stark Vegas Clubhouse? Very easy to do. It's true. As you Google, you're going to get some booking options. You're going to get Airbnb, you're going to get VRBO, you're going to get the Evolve website. If you choose the Evolve website, I can save you 10% off your stay. Give you some incentive. Use promo code BSR10, the number 10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay. It's 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. And how many times do you come to Starkville and say, you know what, I'd love to come up here when it's not a ballgame weekend so I can just kind of enjoy Starkville? Go to all my favorite restaurants and not really have the long line or the whole wait. Go to my favorite clothing stores around here and be able to shop and just enjoy being in Starkville without the hustle and bustle of a game weekend. Yeah, we love it when you're here during ballgame weekends, but you know, how many times have you just come up here and said, you know what, wouldn't it be cool to spend a couple days in Starkville just going around and kind of reliving our college days? You know, maybe you're a younger person and say, hey, let's all go down to a local watering hole that we used to go to and sing karaoke and just be friends. Maybe it's a couples weekend, guys weekend, girls weekend, whatever. They can accommodate you at a Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, let's get ready to get out of here. A couple things I want to get over. Of course, again, tomorrow is the prospect camp. Last one for a little bit, and then pretty soon we're going to have football camps and basketball camps. We'll get coverage of all that stuff. Baseball camps will be starting pretty soon, too. I don't know how much in-person coverage we'll have there, but we'll have some. I think it's important to understand, too, like the recruiting rules are changing. Things are changing. As I mentioned early in the show, you know, a lot of the big-name football prospects don't come to June prospect camps anymore. So the thing that I begin to ask is, when does the NCAA adjust that part of the calendar? Right? Do you start doing prospect camps in the spring? Do you start doing it during spring break? Do you start working on that aspect of it? Don't rule it out, because who thought we'd be taking official visits in June 5 years ago? It's true. Remember, we used to always, the OVs used to always be in November, December. You know, the early contact period, the contact period that opened up, you know, the Saturday after the Egg Bowl, that Sunday, that was like the beginning of the home stretch. You got to the Egg Bowl, and then it was like coaches on the road, bowl practice, and then signing day in February, and everybody took their official visits either late November or in December and in part of January, and that was the calendar. It's what we kept up with. And now all of a sudden, it's basically year-round. And I had a college football coach today that's not affiliated with Mississippi State tell me, he goes, man, it's just every day now. You know, there's no downtime until you get to like July. And you get like a couple weeks off, you can be with your friends and family, and maybe you can play some golf, and that's it. He said the dead period's a good thing. He goes, but even then, you're on your phone constantly trying to set things up. Because like once you get through the June camps, you know, you're done for a while, right? You get through the June official visits, you're done with in-person recruiting until you get into game day, right? Then you start having fall camp, and of course they're limiting some of that stuff too. Wouldn't like that before. Used to, guys could just come and watch practice if somebody wanted to. So the calendar is ever evolving. But I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of coaches out there that say, hey, we're not getting anything from the June camps now because everybody's taking OVs. And so you bring in the sophomores and the juniors, and you look at those guys, and you give them an offer. And, of course, they're restricting when you can and can't offer those guys, at least officially. And so I think you're going to see some things change. And I think when you get into the summer months, too, that should be the time when you get kids on campus and work them out. That, of course, becomes the problem, right? If they don't want to come, how do you evaluate them? Right? How do you see how they take college coaching? And so I think there has to be probably a little tweak there. Probably. And not to mention, how many of these guys are in football shape come June? You know, they just finished up spring football, Steve. Well, you know, a lot of that's just 7-on-7, to be honest with you. A lot of people don't even put the pads on anymore in the spring, unless it's a spring game. You just don't do a lot of hitting these days. So the game has changed. And, of course, you know, baseball, of course, you know, you want to be able to camp kids, but it's not like it used to be where you're offering kids as sophomores and freshmen, and you have to wait now. You know, and so I think that's a good thing for Mississippi State, because there may be a kid that before, maybe you just pass on a kid and 2 years later he is he's elevated his game a little bit. Maybe he's not a Southern Miss or a Memphis kid or UAB kid. Maybe now he is an SEC guy. And so I think in that respect, the recruiting rules kind of help us. And of course, I want whoever Chris Jans wants. You know, I'm a big Chris Jans fan. I think we're going to do exceptionally well. And of course, glad to get that extension behind us. And he spoke with the media earlier this week, and Justin Frommer was there and broke the thing down in several pieces for you guys to enjoy. But, you know, Chris says, too, about the old Arkansas thing. Don't believe everything you read on the internet. You know, Chris, I don't. But I do like it when we get positive news. It's like, hey, this is not true, right? We deny and decline interest in those. Of course, we all know Tommy Pinebox Tuberville. We understand that. You remember those things. But, yeah, it'd be really nice. You know, because all we went through with Dan Mullen, it'd be so nice if a coach would ever just come out and say, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, we went through that with Jamie Treadwell last year. You know, so many people out there that, of course, clearly had better sources than me, you know, because I still haven't run into Coach Treadwell yet. But my point being is that Jamie came out and said over and over again, I'm not interested in the job, and nobody believed him, you know. It's funny how that all works. And you go back to the old Nick Saban thing, too. Nick said, hey, I'm not interested in this job. And lo and behold, he becomes the head coach at Alabama. But that never really happens for Mississippi State, though. You know, you'd like to have somebody come out there and take a lot of pride in the job and pride in being part of our organization and say, you know what, hey, this is the best place in the world, and not do it after a job is filled. You know what I'm saying? And maybe I'm just insecure about that. But I wish that people held Mississippi State in the same value that many of us do. It's like, hey, I got the best job in the world, you know, and this is where I want to be, you know. And, you know, a lot of people are going to say, you know, and do the right things, you know. But people respond to authenticity. And that's one thing, too. I spoke about this in Hoover with some people. How many schools out there make T-shirts for their coaches and jerseys for their coaches, and then fans in turn buy those T-shirts and jerseys of their coaches? like they do with Tony Vitello. God, it's a pretty polarizing figure. I mean, would you wear a Chris Simonis jersey? Well, I'd say probably not. And many of you, you know, like, hey, Steve, I can't get over the last 2 years. Let me encourage you to, because they're behind us. But I just think to myself, you know, there has to be, you know, some level of relationship that kind of yields or lends itself to an esprit de corps. We feel like we're all in this thing together. And that was one of the things that kind of wore everybody's welcome out with Dan Mullen, is that every year, and I can't count how many times I'd have to get on the phone and call somebody and say, no, it's not Rutgers. He's not willing to go to Rutgers. No, he's not going to Virginia Tech. And I'd say, the guy from Rutgers is like, well, you know, Megan's from up here. Maybe he just wants to come home. I said, dude, with all due respect, dude, he's not leaving an SEC job where he's paid in the top 10 to go to Rutgers. Well, he's already made his money. Guy, it's not going to happen. I don't know what donor told you that. It's not going to happen. Not only did Dan Mullen's wallet need it, Dan Mullen's ego would not allow him to leave her and go to Rutgers. I mean, come on, you know. But I truly wish sometimes coaches would just come out and make statements and say, you know what, I'm here and I'm happy to be here. I'm not interested in talking to anybody else. I understand trying to find out what your value is worth and you have an agent for all that sort of stuff. And, of course, let's be honest, the sports world is run by agents. I just wish sometimes people would come out and say, hey, this is where I want to be. As soon as the rumors begin, not after the job is filled. Much different deal. And again, go to DutyNobleBook.com and you can pre-order the new book, Duty Noble, The Dude, and it'll be The Life and Times of Duty Noble. That'll be out late August, early September. And all of my sports titles are there, and of course, When the Bottom Falls. And book number 7, can you believe it? Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's nuts, man. People ask me how many you want to write, and I said, well, how many did Willie Morris write? You know, that's the goal, right? Willie Morris, obviously one of the greatest writers that ever called Mississippi home. You know, wrote some of the most amazing books ever. And many of them very, very pertinent. You know what I mean? It wasn't just like him opining about life. Even My Dog Skip, great, 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 great book. So if you don't read, you should. And if you're just a Mississippi State collector, I'm going to keep stacking these books up for you as best I can so you can detail out your fan cave. But I think The Dude, in many respects, is going to be a book that every Mississippi State fan wants. I tell you, every Bulldog fan needs Dogpile. You know, this one is going to be on that same level, except it's, you know, it's historical. It's not just a moment in time. It goes back and really to the infancy of Mississippi State athletics, and works its way up, of course, until the end of the Duty Noble. The era ended, and you're going to learn a lot about the man, the coach, the AD. There's so many things that you need to know about, and I think you're going to be excited to read this book. You're going to learn a lot of things that you never knew. You can learn some things about the rivalry. You can learn some things about the administration, a lot about your state government. And there's a lot of things that people have done to kind of throw hurdles in Mississippi State's way. It's true. It's true. Let's get out of here, though. I'm late getting this show up, but I appreciate you guys so much. Hope you all have a great weekend. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends and enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.